say the last 10 games of our season has prepared us for that. We've gotten our tails kicked a few times, quite frankly, and you know, there's been lessons learned in those types of situations that I think have helped strengthen us. You know, I think we showed more offensive toughness the final three games of the year than we had, you know, in some of the prior games. And, hopefully that stretch took care of that.
It's Frank Vogel, the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, getting ready for the playoffs and how he prepares his team for upcoming physical matchups against the Minnesota Timberwolves. And he went back to the 10-game gauntlet. It was unofficially named the hardest 10-game stretch to end a schedule, not just this year in the NBA, but in decades in the NBA. And the Suns navigated it with 7 wins. But you heard Frank Vogel make reference to it. 2 of the 3 losses that the Suns went through were just ugly. There was the loss to Oklahoma City, where they got dominated by 25 points. There was the loss to the Pelicans, which was one of those rare Suns losses, Bick, that was like, you know what? They played okay. Mm-hmm. New Orleans played better.
Mm-hmm.
And then they followed that up with the absolute just wretched stinker against the Clippers, that they lose by 13, but they're down by 31 points in the first quarter of that game.
You brought this up yesterday, but going into that, 7-3 is probably better than any of us could have predicted or
hoped
for.
Absolutely.
But yet it didn't feel, end of it, it didn't feel like, my God, here we go. They did it.
But now it's convenient to take that stat and, this was considered to be the worst gauntlet. Yeah. Again, when we got near the end of that gauntlet, you realized a couple of those opponents were on the second of back-to-backs. And the Suns had distinct advantages in some of those games. It isn't what it sounds like when you say we were 7-3 in the hardest stretch of 10 games the NBA has ever seen. I agree with you on that. Now, that doesn't make it less impressive that they did what they did, primarily and particularly in the last two games and in the stretch of play before that loss to the Pelicans. They did earn what they obtained, but now the reshaping of facts to make it look like this team really found itself in the final 10 games, that isn't true. That doesn't explain either Clippers game.
Yeah,
and again, we're all guilty of this. Kellen Olsen was on Burns and Gambo yesterday and predicted the Timberwolves to win, and you would have thought those two guys, you'd have thought Kellen was guilty of heresy. Like, you what? It's like, have you not watched the Suns this year? And we all believe this matchup against the Timberwolves is what is going to tip the scales in the Suns' favor. But do we really have this short of memories?
And one thing about Kellen also, he is not a homer.
Thank God for that.
And he's not a hater. He's very objective when he looks at the Suns and what they can and can't do in the matchups and stuff.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
That will bring you trust. That's why people trust what he says about basketball. Because they know it isn't all just pom-pom, rah-rah BS.
You pointed to the game, I think, in that 10-game finish. And that was the second game against the Clippers. And that gets, folded into the 7-3 finish. Hey, a 16-point win against the Clippers. That to me, and at the beginning of it, you said you didn't take into account all the things, all the conditions in that 10-game gauntlet. The Clippers resting their starters basically for 2 straight nights,
mm-hmm.
Especially on that back night. Mm-hmm. All right, you get the win, but it was one of the most, if there's such a thing as a frustrating win for the Phoenix Suns, mm-hmm. that was it. Still, to Jared's point, it is better than any of us projected in that 7-3 finish.
That's true.
And
not arguing that.
Can you build on that? Now, this matchup with the Timberwolves, the regular season matchup, has been entirely one-sided for the Suns. They swept them in 3 games, made them look bad on offense, made them look bad on defense, maybe made them question themselves going mm-hmm. into this matchup. Yusuf Nurkic was a guest of Burns and Gambo yesterday, and he reiterated, hey, regular season is over. We're not dwelling on that. This is now the playoffs.
I mean, regular season doesn't mean anything. 0-0, so it doesn't count those 3 wins for us. I've been a part with the Blazers that, we was losing, I think, 4 against Oklahoma City, and we beat them. So I don't think the regular season matters much for us or for them. But we know what kind of team we have, and we don't care that we don't look at how we beat them 3 times, and now we're going to go, no, it's going to be 0-0 and going to their home. great game, and you know, that's a really good team out there, having a really successful year with a great, you know, president. They're really good team, so we give them respect, but at the same time, we come in ready to play.
And that is the right attitude to have, but the Suns have also, for a number of different reasons this year, let their guard down. And we're not going to be dealing with, hey, Anthony Edwards isn't going to play game two because he's resting. That's out the window. That's where the Suns have let their guard down the most this year. And the continued reaction to that, well, their stars weren't playing, so all their role players felt free to play a little bit harder or a little bit better. That was one of the most frustrating storylines of this season. But it only takes one. Saturday afternoon in Minnesota, this series gets underway. And the Timberwolves are going to have that same mindset. You know, and if it's in there, it's subconscious. Hey, they beat us three times this regular season. We're on our home floor. They win game one, it's up for grabs. If they win game one, it almost can wash away everything that the Suns did against the Timberwolves in the regular season.
I think the Timberwolves have to win both their home games to kind of get right emotionally. The Suns win either one of those home games, and I think the Timberwolves are going to collapse, and I do think that's going to happen. I just watched this game on Sunday that the Timberwolves were very vested in winning. Karl Anthony Towns is back in the lineup, and how fragile this team is emotionally, and how they get so high and how they get so low. And you talk about Karl Anthony Towns and the Poking the Bear episode from way back when.
Yeah.
Then you get to last Sunday, Anthony Edwards, who just was beside himself, all that bad body language on the court. It's they don't think they can hang with the Suns. That's their body language, and they play like it. So they're really gonna have to get over an emotional hurdle, and they're gonna have to find a way to win a couple of games to if they're gonna seize advantage of the series, they're gonna have to find a way to win both those home games.
Yeah, Anthony Edwards in three games against the Suns this year, -63 while he's on the floor, 13 of 42 from the floor.
Wow,
and those numbers are jarring, but. He's the guy. He's the leader of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and if he's going to pull this series out, you have to expect way more from Anthony Edwards, and I hope the Suns are bracing from that.
Yes.
Grayson Allen did talk yesterday, too, about the Suns' success against Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, I think all the four guys off the ball that aren't guarding him have done a great job of being active in the games we've played him and showing presence to discourage the drive or muck it up a little bit, get hands in there and deflections, and then they have good shooters too, so still having the urgency to get out to guys and not give up those open threes are big when you have a guy like that that's pressure in the paint.
Yeah, we'll have a lot more on Suns Timberwolves getting closer to the series, which begins on Saturday. Also want to remind you, you can enter to win an exclusive NFL draft experience. Just text DRAFT to 620-620 to enter for the chance to win a reserve table and $200 in food and beverage credit at Flanker's Kitchen and Sports Bar inside the BetMGM Sportsbook, all while having a front row seat at Arizona Sports live broadcast as we await the Cardinals' first pick. That's DRAFT, D-R-A-F-T, to 620-620 right now. Speaking of the draft, the Cardinals are getting reminders from unlikely sources not to overcomplicate things at number four. We'll get into and more next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Luke. What can we expect from Jordan Montgomery when he makes his Diamondbacks debut? We'll ask the guy who signed him. D-backs GM Mike Hazen joins us at 11:45. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
It's a Wednesday edition of Bickley and Murata Mornings. Coming to you live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, Jared Carlin, Sarah Cazell taking you up until 10 o'clock. We are 8 days away. Man, we got a lot of stuff coming together now. We got the exit of a hockey team. Baseball season's underway. The NBA playoffs. The NFL draft. There's a lot going on here. 8 days away
from
the
say
NFL
that again.
Draft.
Oh, don't say that again. We did that before.
Cardinals have the fourth overall pick. We've gone over the storylines, the possibilities. They are in a very... What's the term? They're in the catbird seat, maybe, as a lot of people view it, as a team that is in possession of a pick that others will want to trade a lot for. We've also gone over the debate. If quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, Cardinals are on the board at number four. Position of need, wide receiver, Marvin Harrison Jr., considered by some, not everybody, it's not a consensus, maybe the best wide receiver prospect to come into the league in the last 15, 20 years.
Right.
Maybe. One person that is reminding not necessarily just the Cardinals, but other teams, don't overthink this when it comes to Marvin Harrison Jr. Just draft him. And that's his former college quarterback, C.J. Stroud, now with the Houston Texans.
Why should it be Marv? Put on the tape. He's done it from really his freshman year, his true freshman year, to now. When you talk about, I read something like he's NFL ready, but other guys have more potential. That makes no sense. Like, what? Like, if you're NFL ready, how is that not potential? You know, like, you want longevity. You want somebody who's been doing it, you know. And for him, that's what he sleeps, eats, and he breathes. You know, he's a worldly talent, but also his work ethic and, you know, how he gravitates like that room. I challenged him that last year when Jackson went down, he had to take over as his leader, and he did that. You know, he's not really vocal, but he became vocal, and you can see his personality start to come out as he started to play more. And, you know, for me, I mean, I think I would love to play with him again. I know I probably won't get that opportunity for a while, but, you know, I'm super, super proud of him. And, man, who's up there, man, be smart. Don't be dumb. Don't think too hard.
Be smart.
Don't be dumb.
Don't think too hard.
Yeah.
From a guy who threw passes to him in college, there's two ways to look at that. Do you just say, yeah, C.J. Stroud is right, why overthink this? Or do you go down the road of take it with a grain of salt because everybody's going to have their college boys back?
Yes, and so now after hearing C.J. Stroud say that, now keep in mind this is the player that a lot of people missed, the player that was really missed on last year, above all else. Right. This was the thing where when people started looking at quarterbacks, they, for whatever reason, okay, Bryce Young is better.
Yeah. Looking at you, Carolina.
Right. Exactly. So that gives us a little bit of weight. And, you know, I have been wrong so often on college football players who I thought were going to pop in the pros, that I should be an NFL general manager. I'd fit in perfectly. With my record of misses, I'd fit in perfectly. Steve Keim would have nothing on me. So I look at this and I'm really receptive into what other people say, and I'm not really, really embedded in my own opinion of players. But in watching Marvin Harrison Jr. this year and in knowing that he has succeeded every year at Ohio State, this isn't a one-year guy. This is a guy that has been great from the moment he stepped onto campus there. And he's got every metric you need. He's got all the production you would want. And he's got great lineage. Okay, so I have been of the belief that there is separation. That Malik Nabers was part of a 50-point-per-game offense. It's like being Lendale White at USC. You're among all these great weapons. So your production is going to look spectacular. I've watched tape on Malik Nabers. He's unbelievable accelerating off the line of scrimmage. Is that going to translate to the pros? A lot of fast guys don't do squat in the NFL.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm not here to say he's not all that, because I don't know enough. And this Roma Dunze, I watched him at the end of the year, and I'm like, this is one gritty football player. This is one of those wide receivers who literally will fight somebody for the football. And that's a great attribute to have. But to me, it's always been Marvin Harrison Jr. is number one. And you just have to remind yourself, the way people are flipping about quarterbacks now, stunning to me. There was an ESPN analyst on this morning, I didn't know who it was, but he said Jaden Daniels is better than Caleb Williams. And so everything we thought we knew from watching football players play football has been turned on its head.
Was it Booger McFarlane?
I don't think so.
Because he's been of that belief.
Yeah. No, this was not Booger. This was somebody that was on this morning. I didn't recognize the voice. I didn't immediately place the voice.
Snot Jones.
Dane Brugler from The Athletic, who does a lot of draft prep, puts out this, what they call the beast, this draft prep guide. It's ridiculous. But he also put out a 7-round mock draft today on The Athletic. So he is of the belief, at least in this latest projection, that Monty Ossenfort, and people say, well, Monty Ossenfort's track record tells you that he's going to be a wheeler and dealer. It's 1 year. That was last year's experience.
Everyone keeps bringing up that point, and you're right, it's 1 year.
It's 1 year, so we don't know what's going to happen. What we do know is I think the Cardinals are in better position, Bick, to fight the urge to be wheelers and dealers, to acquire more picks, because they're already flush with picks. They've got a ton of picks. Six of the first 90, is it? That's a good spot to be in.
Oh, yeah.
But Brugler's got the Vikings trading up from 11 to number four with the Cardinals. Vikings trade the 11, the 23, and a 2025 third-round pick to the Cardinals for four. Some people will say, well, if you're going to use the Trey Lance example, that's not enough to move up from 11 to 4. He's also then got the Cardinals moving back up from 11 to 5 in a trade with the Chargers. Cardinals trading 11 and 35 to the Chargers for number 5. So they would still end up with three first-round picks in this year's draft after all the wheeling and dealing. The Vikings would get J.J. McCarthy. The Cardinals would still get Marvin Harrison at 5. I'd be okay with that.
That's not a bad kind of alternative. I was told by one of my writer buddies in New York that the Giants, according to people who cover the Giants, they have done more quarterback prep work this year than they have ever done. So the thinking is that they're going to want a quarterback as bad as the Vikings do. So I'm real curious to see where the maneuvering is going to go.
Yeah, you're right. It seems like everybody's pointing at Minnesota as that team.
As the team that's desperate.
But it could be the Giants. And look, if you move up two spots, are you going to get the haul you want for a team moving up two spots?
Right. And it really all depends on who you want, because you know it's a bad strategy to be like the 49ers. You don't just go in and say, we'll take one of the four and make it work. You've got it. You've got, if you're going to trade up, you've got to have a guy. You've got to have a target on one person. And then you've got to get to that person. But nobody is really confident of what this order is going to look like after number one. And is that are the Bears actually considering Jaden Daniels? I don't think so.
No. As much as I wanted to believe that the Caleb Williams situation would be all strife with drama, it really hasn't been. I think the Bears have probably already drawn up the contract.
And here's the thing, too. The fact that the Raiders are alleged to be very much enamored with Jaden Daniels, would love to be able to go up and get him. Apparently, they're not going to make that attempt to get that high. But if Antonio, for somebody who has had experience with Jaden Daniels, I think that tells you a lot about what he might see in the intangibles of this kid. I don't know. It's if somebody were to say to you, who is going to bust? Who's going to be the bust out of this quarterback class? I think everybody would probably say, probably Drake May now. No,
not J.J. McCarthy.
I would vote J.J. McCarthy. But I think if you did a poll, put this on a poll. Who is going to bust out of these four quarterbacks?
Okay,
because somebody's going to. Probably multiple people are going to.
There might be. I'm not sold on any of them. Honestly. Coming up next with the big stories of this Wednesday morning in Rush Hour Reboot Form with Sarah Cazell. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley and Murata Mornings. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. Arizona built for America's dreams.
Welcome into the Rush Hour Reboot, everybody, here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. I'm Sarah Cazell with Dan Bickley.
Hi!
With Vince Murata.
What do you think about Vic Danley's long hair?
And with Jarrett Carlin.
How's your butt doing?
I really care. We are Bickley and Murata Mornings, and we are taking you through the top stories of the day like we do every single day at 7:30. And I'm in my all-black head-to-toe today, guys.
Special occasion.
Special occasion, yeah. That's definitely not me every single day here at this station. It's for the Arizona Coyotes. They are at Mullet Arena tonight for what we are expecting to be the final time. Certainly a sad day for the Valley and for hockey fans here after 28 years, 27 seasons of the Coyotes in Arizona. Here is Coyotes president and CEO Javier Gutierrez last May after the Tempe vote failed.
We are very disappointed that Tempe voters did not approve Propositions 301, 302, and 303. As Tempe Mayor Corey Woods said, this was the best sports deal in the history of Arizona. The Coyotes wish to thank every single person who supported our efforts and voted yes.
I remember the next day, at least for me, it kind of felt like a funeral. They weren't gone yet, but it just, the writing was on the wall. We have covered the trials and tribulations of this organization all throughout the years. Poor ownership multiple times, not having a stable home, struggling to get butts in seats until they moved to a 5,000-seat arena. What are you guys feeling today as Arizonans, as sports fans, as people who have covered this team? How are you feeling as they go into this final game?
Angry, resentful that, you know, we've covered this team for nearly three decades and it never, ever got out. I remember about, 15 years ago, writing that the Coyotes felt like the boat in the movie A Perfect Storm, that final line when Matt Damon or George Clooney says, she's not going to let us out. We're not getting out of this. And they lasted like 15 years after that, and they're still not getting out of it. So I'm frustrated. I'm angry. I'm resentful. I'm sad. It's just stupid.
You hit on a couple of the ingredients in my cocktail as well. Gin? No. Anger? Frustration? I'd be lying if I didn't mention relief in there.
Yeah, let's
not relieved that they're leaving, but relieved that this frustration of this saga is finally over for a lot of people. Now, there's a chance that this gets booted back up in years to come, but for I at least feel a little bit of relief. Like, finally, there's some closure to it.
Yeah.
Not the closure we were looking for, but closure is closure.
Yeah. I believe the word you were looking for was rebooted.
Yeah. Sorry. I left out the re.
The Coyotes have the Oilers tonight at 7 o'clock on 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app. And I think, Bick, was it you who mentioned yesterday and earlier today that there's going to be like a party in the parking lot kind of situation?
I believe that every person who identifies as a Coyotes fan is going to be either in that arena or at that arena tonight.
Okay, so if you're a Coyotes fan, if you care, if you're sad to see the team go show your support outside of Mullet Arena if you can't get inside. I know those seats are not affordable. We had some Suns news yesterday that came down near the end of our show. Didn't have much time to talk about it. Associate head coach Kevin Young is leaving the Suns this spring to take over as head coach of BYU men's basketball. ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski reported the hire yesterday, and he noted that Young will stick with the Suns through their playoff run, however long that is, but he will get to work right away recruiting and building his BYU staff. Here is Suns GM and president of basketball operations, James Jones, on losing Kevin Young.
I'm so excited for him. We're so excited for him, but it's bittersweet. We spent a lot of time together. He's been instrumental in what we've built here in Phoenix, but it's an opportunity for him to show the world how great of a coach he is. And they're extremely fortunate to have him. I know we have been, but it's bittersweet. We have unfinished business, and we'll close it out the right way and send him home with victories.
Now, Kevin Young joined the Suns in 2020, and when they were looking for their next head coach this time last year, a lot of Suns fans were really hoping that he would slide into that head coach role so that his offensive genius could flourish. Obviously, they didn't go with him, but he still had a big role on this staff, with Frank Vogel being more defensive-minded. Looking at how the Suns' offense has worked this year, how significant of a loss is this for the Suns?
Yeah, I was just talking to somebody a minute ago outside the studio about the importance of this. I don't know how to frame this up, because you can look at this and say, oh, why would you go and coach in college where we know that these jobs are very, very difficult right now when you're part of a staff on a team that might be championship worthy? Then you got to ask yourself, does he read writing on the wall? Does he know that his time might be numbered based on the lack of any real schematic foundation to this offense? Kevin Young, as a million-dollar assistant and architect of this offense, has been a disappointment. So maybe it's that.
But on the flip side of it, how frustrated is Kevin Young that he wasn't able to do a lot of coaching this year? We've talked about it a lot during the course of the season.
Yeah.
When you got a team with Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, it's a good problem to have, but it's a hard team to coach. These are guys that are setting their ways offensively. Mm-hmm. So maybe Kevin Young read the room in Phoenix, read the room, not getting the Brooklyn job, and decided, hey, I can go back to my home state
Yep.
A pretty good basketball program in the Big 12 and actually teach and actually show what I can do offensively. I don't know. It's spitballing. I think it's significant to lose a member of your staff who now has like dual responsibilities during the playoffs. It's not the ideal situation for the Suns.
That was my next question. He is going to start, as Woj said, start recruiting right away and start hiring his staff. Are you guys concerned at all about his head being somewhere else while the Suns are in the playoffs?
I'm not going to doubt the professionalism of Kevin Young, but it crossed my mind. How much are they going to lean on him during this?
Right. And the answer is not much. I don't mean to make that sound flippant, but if you're going to allow an assistant coach to build his next job while you're in a playoff mix, then I think it's going to be minimal contributions.
We're going to hear from James Jones, by the way, coming up a little less than an hour from now, 8:30. And so make sure you are tuned in for that conversation.
Absolutely. All rebooted. Thank you, sir.
Yes,
Rush Hour. You've been rebooted.
Every morning at 7:30. Coming up next, we'll hit some NBA storylines coming out of the play-in games in the Western Conference last night, and there's a bunch of them. It's Bickley and Murata mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Tonight is going to be the final Arizona Coyotes game. What should the reception be like at Mullet Arena? It's the Burns and Gambo Show, 2-6 on Arizona Sports.
No, ain't no more pace. Pace yourself well. It's now the sprint. It's the sprint now. We already went through the marathon.
So my point being, now you have a different level you can reach on that end, and you'll tap in.
Yeah, I do whatever it takes. I mean, all the percentages and all that. It's out the window. The season's over with, so it's about just winning. Win again.
That is LeBron James of the seventh-seeded Los Angeles Lakers. They claimed that spot last night. Play-in win over the New Orleans Pelicans, so the Lakers move into the big bracket. Pelicans have to play for their postseason lives on Friday against the Sacramento Kings, who ousted the Golden State Warriors last night. LeBron had a good game last night, 23 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists. They get over on New Orleans. There was, we'll get into it again. The Zion Williamson injury to me is the biggest storyline that came out of that game, because he was playing the game of his life, can't finish it in the fourth quarter. Had he been able to finish, we might be very well talking about a different outcome.
Possibly.
He was that unstoppable.
But the Lakers were also in control of that game for most of the game. But you're right.
Four-point game.
It got to the point where it was very close at the end, and the timing of that Zion injury was really like, oh, come on, are you kidding me? Yeah, and it's going to be interesting now, because if that injury was a hamstring tweak, which it seems to have been, he ain't playing on Friday.
And let's face it, those two teams, the Lakers and Pelicans, were staring each other down that whole game of just who was going to get hurt, Zion or Anthony Davis. It's the playoffs, and one of them was not going to make it
through
the game.
Anthony Davis has been, like Kevin Durant, he's been very available this year.
Remarkably healthy this year.
And he's actually played through stuff this year. So,
We sort of mocked ESPN earlier for saying, are the Lakers a threat to the Denver Nuggets? Can they win it all? What do you think, though? If they are healthy, if Anthony Davis and LeBron do make it through the playoffs, are they? Are you scared of them at all?
Well, am I scared of them? That's an interesting question. I think the bigger question is, are the Nuggets scared of them? And what exactly are the Nuggets going to look like once these bright lights come
on?
That's
exactly how I was going to frame it, too. Like, we've talked about the Nuggets all season long as being clearly, in our minds, the best team in the West, despite what the standings say. Better than Minnesota, better than a young and up-and-coming Oklahoma City team, but certainly looks beatable. And framing that through, the Phoenix Suns lens, definitely beatable.
Yeah.
As the Suns beat them 2 out of 3 games this year. Champions have a way of focusing, recalibrating everything once the playoffs start, and there's no taking that away. The Denver Nuggets are the champions. They're the team with the target on their back in the Western Conference, and really going into the playoffs.
Yeah,
I think they should be ultimately confident.
Yeah,
the Lakers, that whole cockamamie plot line of they should not win tonight so they can avoid the Nuggets. I like the fact that Darvin Ham laughed at that and kind of dismissed that. You want to be ultimately confident going in. And again, we can't sit here and talk about how the regular season clears everything away, but I think from a psychological standpoint, it does. I think the Nuggets win the series.
Yeah.
But again, the LA Lakers are not your normal 7 seed. Just like last year, they were not your normal 8 seed, and they proved it by getting to the conference finals.
Yeah, listen, they haven't had success against the Nuggets this year. They've been 0-3 against the Nuggets, if I recall that correctly. Yet at the same time, this is not your normal 7 seed. LeBron and Anthony Davis and that cast they've got around them. D'Angelo Russell has been a terrific three-point shooter for them. It's just a matter of whether or not the Nuggets have that gear and go there right away. As somebody who has covered a couple of three-peats, one of the things that I learned the first time around with the Bulls is that year two, you kind of realize you pace yourself. And when the playoffs come, you find the switch. Year three, you're kind of sick of everything. And it's just, it's such a grind at that point that finding the switch is kind of difficult.
That might lead your best player to retire after that third championship.
Exactly. So, I don't know. Either way, the winner of that series will be the Suns' next opponent. So I guess the question is, if you are a Suns fan, can you bring yourself to cheer for the Lakers in this series? Would you rather face the Lakers when you've had more success, at least this year, against the Nuggets?
Yeah, that's your matchup. If you're a Suns fan, you get past Minnesota, you're looking at the Lakers or the Denver Nuggets in the second round. Who would you rather have? I mean, the Lakers have played really well against the Suns this year.
The Nuggets did not. Yep, you'd have home court advantage against the Lakers,
yes.
But you have a better track record against the Nuggets, at least the Nuggets that we saw during the regular season. Now, again, we're just talking. Nobody is trying to say that the Suns have their first round series in their back pocket.
No, not at all.
We're just talking. We're allowed to do that. We're sports fans.
I had a moment of conflict in the Pelicans-Lakers game. When there was the altercation between Jose Alvarado and D'Angelo Russell, I was like, oh no, who do I root for here? Two of my least favorite players in the league.
Yeah.
And two guys, honestly, Alvarado's playing really good basketball, and we saw that up close and personal here. D'Angelo Russell, for as much as I have poo-pooed on him in recent years, he was fantastic.
I like Jose Alvarado as a player way more than I like D'Angelo Russell.
Do you?
Yeah, Jose Alvarado, I admire his game. I admire his toughness and his grit. Yeah, I mean, we didn't like what he brought to that series against the Suns a couple years ago, but D'Angelo Russell is just a goof. And he's been good this year.
Yeah, he's been really good.
And yeah, he's been a really good force for them beyond the 3-point line. So this is an interesting series, and it really kind of lends credence to the fact that how did the Nuggets lose to the Spurs when they had the number one seed locked up practically?
The Spurs will do that to you.
Oh, yeah, we're proof, aren't we?
Three times proof.
Yeah.
The other Western playing last night. Sacramento crushes Golden State in Sacramento.
What a shame.
So the Warriors season comes to an end, and everybody's wondering what happens now with the Warriors. Klay Thompson becomes a free agent now. Steph Curry, Draymond Green under contract. Steph Curry said, I can't see myself not with these guys.
I can never see myself, you know, not with those two guys. I understand this league changes and there's so many things that go into it, and we're not going to play forever, but, you know, we've experienced so much together, and at the end of the day, like, again, I know they want to win, I know I want to win, and that's all I worry. That's all I'm worried about.
Draymond Green had this to say.
I have no reason not to. You know, they suck with us through the good and the bad. It's not so great this year, but can't win every year. So, yeah, I do have confidence until it's no longer.
Confidence in the fact that the core three of himself, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, will remain together. Klay Thompson was awful last
year. Oh, and listen, and I don't think if you're the Golden State Warriors, you can't pay him, right? How erratic and undependable he's become and how fragile he's become.
The market, I mean, would probably, he's going to take a little bit of a haircut at this point of his career with his diminished productivity, but probably still looking at being able to get $20 million a year from somebody.
0 points in a play-in game.
Which is weird, too. In the 15 games leading up to that game for Klay Thompson, he was shooting like 41% from three-point range. He was averaging 15 points a game. He was playing maybe his best basketball of the year. And for that to happen in that circumstance. Klay Thompson hits a couple shots. I'm not sure they're winning that game. Mm. They just looked old and broken to me last night.
Steph Curry should ask for a trade to Phoenix.
Let's shake this up.
Yeah. Well, send me to the place that originally had plans to trade for me. For people who don't know, Steph Curry was this close to being traded to the Suns.
All but reported that the Amari for Steph trade was happening.
And then Don Nelson, somewhere with a bottle of Jack and a bong loaded and ready to go, picked up the phone and said, don't do that trade. Yep. Keep Steph Curry.
I still remember being on the floor underneath the draft head. You were there, the draft head. Oh. You could hear the celebration going
Steve
on.
Steve Kerr up there
that
cheering.
That this was going to happen and the Suns were going to get Steph Curry.
Could you imagine pretty sure if Steph Curry had been ours all this
miscommunication,
time?
Miscommunication. Don Nelson had the munchies. Said, I could really go for Curry right now.
And for those who don't know, I'm not slandering Don Nelson. He has a marijuana farm in Hawaii.
Yeah,
he
does. No, very open about
Very open about it.
Good for him.
That guy ruined it for us.
Coming up next, Bick will kick off the 8 o'clock hour of the show, the second half of the show, in only the way that he can, with the Bickley Blast.
Fire.
It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.